So yesterday I took up case number 15 in Zen Echoes, Nanchuan's Not Mind, Not Buddha. Case 16 in Zen Echoes is Nanchuan kills the cat. Case 17 is Nanchuan's circle. And I've given talks on those cases in the not too distant past, but I like to stay with Nanchuan a little longer. So here's a case found in both Entangling Vines and The Iron Flute. And although there's a slight variation in the telling, I'll sort of distill them, put them together, and tell you what we have here. So when Nanchuan was living in a little hut, a monk visited him. Nanchuan said, "I'm going to the mountains to work. Make yourself at home. Cook what you'd like for lunch. And when you're finished eating, please bring a portion to me." Later on that day, the monk made lunch, ate, then broke the pots and dishes, threw away the remaining provisions, and lay down for a nap. Nanchuan waited a long time, but the monk didn't come. So at night, he returned to the hut, quite hungry. On arriving, Nanchuan found the monk sleeping peacefully, but when he stretched his own tired body beside the monk on the lone single sleeping platform, the monk got up and left. Later, after Nanchuan became the head of a temple, he said, "When I was living in a hermitage, I met a talented follower of the way, the likes of whom I've never seen again." Or, as The Iron Flute translates, "He was such a good monk, I miss him even now." So before going on to this case, I'd like to tell you a little bit about The Iron Flute, 100 Zen Koan. The Iron Flute was put together in the 18th century Japan by the Soto monk Genro, who then added a short commentary and verse to each koan. His Dharma heir, Fuge, added his comments to his teachers, sometimes admonishing the old boss, sometimes adding a point, and sometimes simply showing his own mind, filled with insight, sharp humor, and utter delight. Nyogen Senzaki, the young Robert Aiken's first teacher, began translating these koan and commentaries in the early 1930s, and used them for his Dharma talks, adding his own comments and verses. I imagine Roshi was present at times to hear Nyogen's take on koan, and I can only imagine if we read Roshi's Teisho closely, we can hear some of his first teacher's words. So I'd like to read you the first couple paragraphs in the introduction to The Iron Flute, written by an heir of Katagiri Roshi. And then we'll take up Nanchuan's living in a hermitage. So the intro says, "When I first began practicing Zen under Dainin Katagiri Roshi, he asked me to comment on a Zen koan. I told him in all honesty that I found the koan puzzling. Immediately his face wrinkled up as if he had bitten into a lemon. 'Not puzzle,' he shouted. He quickly made it clear to me that Zen teachings are not puzzles to which we students are expected to come up with clever answers. People often think of koan as riddles or problems that need to be solved. But this is not the case at all. With every koan, the point is not to arrive at an answer through our ordinary conceptualizing minds. Rather, the point is to see for ourselves that our concepts can never provide us with a satisfying response." He goes on and says, "Koans speak of genuineness and ordinariness, actual true reality, without any need for explanation, embellishment, meaning, or improvement. They remind us that we don't need to push the river or add legs to the snake. In short, koans are about life and death, about all our deepest questions and concerns, the ones that are most immediate, urgent, and unavoidable. Life isn't a matter of pleasing the teacher or getting the right answer or passing a test. Koan direct us to be present with what is going on now and to notice how our minds respond to this. Once this is seen, there's no wasting of the day or yourself or the world. What binds you drops away, and you will let it go. So yesterday I picked up a case from Zen Echoes with Nan Chuan saying, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not things. Is there anything wrong in my saying this? And in that case, he was an old and quite confident teacher, wondering aloud to his senior student Zhao Zhou if there was anything wrong or missing in his presentations. His question had some resonance with an exchange he had with Bai Cheng, an older Dharma brother many years before. In the exchange, I'm not sure if Nan Chuan was a senior student or a beginning teacher, but he was certainly not as seasoned as Bai Cheng. Here is how the dialogue went. Bai Cheng asked Nan Chuan, is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded for people by any of the sages of the past? Nan Chuan said, yes, there is. Bai Cheng said, what is this secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded for the people? Nan Chuan said, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not beings. Bai Cheng said, you have expounded like that. And Nan Chuan said, yes, that's how I say it. How about you? Bai Cheng said, I am not a great Zen master. How can I know whether or not there is a Dharma that has never been expounded for people? Nan Chuan said, I don't understand. And Bai Cheng fortunately said, I've already said it fully to you. So after living, sitting, and working with Matsu for many years, Nan Chuan probably went out on pilgrimage for some years, visiting with other teachers and living alone in the mountains, sharpening and honing his Dharma eye. In this instance, he had settled down in a hermitage, probably a fairly small space, with room to cook a simple meal, sit, and sleep. Shirto's grass roof hermitage, which we often recite at Sesshin and Zazenkai, probably evokes some of the flavor of Nan Chuan's abode. In the West, we often think of hermits as free spirits far removed from civilization, making their way entirely on their own. This, however, is far from the Zen Asian model of a hermitage. Often a hermitage is part of a monastery, but it's somewhat of a remove, maybe on the ridge above or poked somewhere into an overhanging hillside, some distance from the monastery. There is, however, a fairly visible footpath from the back monastery fence leading to the hermitage. And the other monastics occasionally look in on the hermit who has that particular role or designation for a set number of years. Often too, when a student is on pilgrimage, usually at the urging of his teacher, he might set up a hermitage, but the small space is often in the area of other hermits who on occasion visit each other, share a cup of tea, or even a meager meal. This might have been the situation with Nan Chuan and the visiting monk. Nan Chuan was quite welcoming with his visitor and said, "Please make yourself comfortable. And at lunchtime, cook what you'd like, but bring me some of the leftovers." You can imagine that Nan Chuan didn't have a refrigerator, and his provisions were probably quite spare. But he was gracious in his offerings. This monk, however, after cooking and eating, not only didn't bring food to Nan Chuan, but instead destroyed the remaining provisions and broke the pots and dishes, and then took a nap. Quite a scandalous monk, no? Nan Chuan missed lunch, but continued working, probably cutting and gathering firewood or digging a latrine, or maybe making a waterway so he could more easily get water to his small garden or even smaller rice patch. Anyway, the work was physical. And you could imagine he was both very tired and hungry that evening. But on arriving at his hermitage, he was again met with no food, but also with ruined provisions and broken scattered pots and utensils. Really almost all that Nan Chuan owned. And there on his sleeping platform, resting easily and peacefully, was the monk. So at this point, I'm not sure what you would have done, but I wouldn't have done what Nan Chuan did. He went and stretched his tired, hungry body beside the monk. This is quite a movement, isn't it? To lie vulnerably next to the one who just trashed your place, eaten your food, and wasted what was remaining. Nan Chuan's attitude, his mind, brings us near the landscape of Tori Zenji's vow. Tori said we can be especially compassionate and affectionate. We can be especially kind and considerate with foolish people, particularly with someone who becomes an enemy and persecutes us. Because that very abuse conveys the Buddha's boundless loving kindness. The abuse is a compassionate device to liberate us entirely from the mean-spirited delusions that we have built up with our wrongful conduct from the beginningless path. With our response to such abuse, we completely relinquish ourselves and a profound and pure faith arises. So this is a very powerful way to live a life. And many of us are feeling tested these days. It is so easy to move into fury or rage, into us and them, into good and bad. There is, unfortunately, often a fear that is activating the fury, rage, anger, and such. And that fear, correct or incorrect, is located around the creation of a substantial, independent, and permanent idea of a self separate from. Nan Chuan located his upset, and rather than moving from it, moved into it. He moved closer to the rogue. Rather than locating the problem outside himself, he moved towards, he leaned into. And it is from that moving into that you are able to see through. You see through the fallacy of substantial, independent, and permanent. And it is from that place, which is no place at all, that we can act with spontaneity and freedom, rather than from a fixed location of reactivity to them, to the other. the mean-spirited delusions that we have built up with wrongful conduct from the beginningless past are initially based on this contrived notion that I am here and you are over there. And it is quite amazing how hard and consistently you have to insist on this separation. You know from these days of Zazen how often the narrator tenaciously, unrelentingly demands to hold its position as central. Only one insecure would assert itself so vociferously, over and over and over, I am, I am, I am. Pay attention to the narration and notice. The teller is always at the center, creating and substantiating. Nanchuan may have had thoughts and feelings. How dare he? And I said, please. I was so welcoming and giving. But rather than reacting from his hurt, displeasure, or fear, he opened further and moved toward the way you move in Zazen, not cutting off, not rejecting, not judging, but opening. Opening not to the story, but to that which is always yearning, to that which is always desiring to come home to the original dwelling. And it is from there where we can move with effectiveness, creativity, and beauty. It is from there where we can move from our outrage, our upset, our fear, into something that is not only sustainable, but sustaining to ourselves and those around us. Of course, there is a more classical way to understand the koan. The monk was a trickster and a thief. Whatever Nanchuan held to, the monk took away. He saw where Nanchuan was still holding on to his pots and pans, to his food, to his pleas, to welcome. He saw that he was holding to contrived convention. And he dashed those things. He dashed Nanchuan's supercilious manners, and he dashed his material possessions. Whatever we stick to, hold to, or attach to is the seed place of suffering. This monk would have none of that. And this is a little off to the side, but this is why in Sesshin, this is why we avoid social greetings and eye contact. It is so we can experience, if only momentarily, the release of societal rules, arbitrary conventions, and unexamined behaviors and conduct. And the point of this isn't to willy-nilly turn everything upside down. The point is to investigate how we are narrowed in our endeavor to save all beings. We give away too quickly what might be possible, making authentic, genuine lives lived almost impossible. In this second telling, Nanchuan understood that his visitor was a great thief, and seeing he had nothing left, he went to lie next to the visitor, and the monk then even took that away, getting up and leaving Nanchuan with nothing but freedom. So before ending, I'd like to tell you of a dialogue between Nanchuan and his senior student Zhao Zhou, and then make a short comment on not mind, not Buddha, not beings. One day when Nanchuan was passing the bathing area, he he saw the monk in charge of that area and asked, "What are you doing?" The monk said, "Heating the bath." Nanchuan said, "Don't forget to call the cow for its bath." That evening, the monk came to Nanchuan's room. Nanchuan asked, "What are you doing here?" The monk said, "I'm here to tell the cow the bath is ready." This is why the teachers of old always had a stick at hand. But Nanchuan wasn't finished yet. He still has something to say here. Nanchuan asked, "Did you bring the reins?" The monk could say nothing. Later, Nanchuan told Zhao Zhou about this. And Zhao Zhou said, "I have something to say." Nanchuan asked, "Did you bring the reins?" At that, Zhao Zhou grabbed Nanchuan's nose and pulled him along. Nanchuan said, all right, but why so rough? It is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not beings. When we forget, the point is the antecedent of it, and focus simply on not, 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 on nete, 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 we act too roughly. We act with too much coarseness and we become boorish. And as we all know, there is far too much of that going around now. So please let it go. Drop it. Abandon it. Surrender. But keep your hands open and your hearts warm. Because though there is a great wisdom in not this, and not this, and not this, we also need the personal experience and practice of interbeing, whose expression is compassion, whose expression is a disciplined and loving passion to free all beings. Compassion isn't just a Buddhist word to bandy about, but the personal experience and practice of our interconnection, of the very fact that we are closer to each other than we are to our own breath. And so, with tongue in cheek, we and Nanchuan remember almost fondly the trickster rogues in our lives who come often and take from us what we thought we needed and leave us with what we say we want.